This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we will talk with Clark Cadzo. For 25 years, he has been one of the staples of Highland and Chimes, where he has run Highland Coffees. And now we hear that come Christmas Eve, Highland Coffees may be run out of Highland and Chimes. What's going on? Is there a coffee war brewing in Baton Rouge? We'll talk with Clark Cadzo about what's going on with his establishment, which has been an institution now for 25 years at the gates of the LSU campus. Also, Al Vernacchio. His book is Changing the Way We Talk to Teens About Sexuality, Values, and Health. The title, For Goodness, Sex. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkstershow at WRKF.org. And you may tweet us at Jim Inkster Show. Our guest is Clark Cadzo. For 25 years, he's owned Highland Coffees. Originally, the coffee shop opened in 1989 at the corner of Highland and Chimes, and then it moved one door over a few years later. That's where it's been for more than 15 years, and now, come Christmas Eve, Clark Cadzo may be out of a coffee shop because his leaseholder has decided to put something else in that spot. Now, negotiations have reopened, but right now, as it stands, Highland Coffees will close in about 2.5 months. Good morning, Clark Cadzo.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Well, you started this in 1989 as a young man, and now you've spent half your life running that coffee shop. So it is your life. There's an emotional attachment for you,
right,
and for your customers. Mm-hmm. Why do you think the shop has had its appeal that is unusual for a place like that?
Well, I think there's a few reasons. I think that, first of all, we've been there for a long time. We got there at a time, 1989, when there weren't any specialty coffee shops in Baton Rouge. And, you know, we're just there season after season, year after year. We also try our best to bring in the highest quality coffee and tea and pastries and create a nice atmosphere. And I think that our customers realize that we genuinely care about them. And I think that's part of what helps that bond to form with the customers.
And you've survived a fire?
Yes, we did. There was a fire that started at the bar next door in 2002. You're better with dates than I am. I think that was 2002. And so we were down for 6 months and were able to rebuild.
But a few years ago, you got a new landlord.
Right.
And have you renewed your lease under the new landlord?
Well, they did sign a lease with me 3 years ago, and it ends towards the end of this semester. And that's why we were talking again to sign a new lease.
And at some point, I guess negotiations went south, and you were informed that there would be a new tenant. When did that happen?
That happened about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
And how were you informed?
Well, we had a little meeting, and they basically said they had decided to go in a different direction and said that, you know, they would give me through the end of the semester, through the end of December, to move out.
Yeah, I'm sure it was quite emotional.
Very emotional. We're just so deeply attached to that neighborhood and our customers, and it was hard to kind of wrap my mind around the fact that we might not be there.
And you had to inform your staff.
That was a very difficult meeting. We talked this weekend, and I explained to them what was happening, and then we put a note out for our customers on Monday morning letting them know that we'd have to close the shop.
297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Clark Cadzo, the proprietor of Highland Coffees, is in-house. And certainly when the story broke in the media early this week, there's been quite a reaction. I'm sure that a reaction that amazes even you.
Yeah, it sure did. I was blown away by the response and the level of support that people have shown.
And a rally Wednesday night at the amphitheater, and you did not attend.
No, that was a group of customers and supporters, and I'm not sure exactly what they did, but I certainly appreciate all of their efforts and their desire to help in any way that they can.
And on Facebook, I think there have been well over 5,000 supporters for an online petition to keep the coffee shop open.
I did hear that. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. What's your take as far as the possibility of reaching a new agreement with your landlord?
Well, we did have a conversation yesterday about that possibility. I don't know. I'm not sure at this moment how realistic it is, but we certainly had a good conversation, and we just look at the lease, the property, the neighborhood from different backgrounds and different perspectives, and hopefully we'll be able to work something out.
So you think there is a possibility?
I guess there's a possibility, sure. But that's, you know, I don't own the property, and I don't offer the lease.
Well, the landlord, who is, of course, also involved with the family that owns Community Coffee, Hank Siraj, he says you're $15 a day apart. That's what he's quoted as saying. Is that accurate?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that, again, I don't want to get too much into the specific numbers, but $15 a day is one way of describing the difference in expectations. Really, I guess that means $500 a month. And I would say that when you put it like that, I guess you could break it down to the minute too and figure out how much it costs per minute for me to be there or to pay extra rent. But the reality is $15 a month is actually a lot more in sales than just that $15. So it's a little bit of a distortion to break it down like that.
All right. That's about $500 a month, which is a lot of money for a small business. And I must say, I've been going to Highland Coffee since it opened, and you don't live a lavish lifestyle. This hasn't made you a wealthy man.
So that's true.
Do you have trouble breaking even?
Well, yeah, it's difficult there on Chime Street. I think all you have to do is look down Chime Street and realize it can't be very easy on this street. The people there have a real passion for the neighborhood, for the history, for the people who like to gather there. And so I think it's more about that than getting wealthy. It better be, because I think people are shocked, rudely awakened, when they once they get to that neighborhood or to Chime Street and realize just how difficult it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've invested in what some would say are the best years of your life, 25 to 50, in this place, and the community has responded. Now, the community is also responding now, but money talks. And ultimately, there may be a new tenant. Now, the stories have indicated a restaurant is intending to move in there. Is that accurate?
Well, that's what I've heard. I don't know for sure. But I would say that, you know, I just think people need to be as open-minded or as wide-eyed, rather, and do as much research as they can before they dive into our neighborhood. There's such an attraction to be next to LSU. People feel like if they can only get next to LSU, that they're going to make lots of money because of the 30,000 students across the street. The reality is that for 16 weeks a year, the students are gone. If you add up all the holidays, that's one-third of the year, just about, the students are gone. That's your main base. And then you've got real difficulty parking, obviously. It's difficult to get over there. You know, we're cut off from the rest of the city. Mm-hmm. And so it's a real challenge. It's a wonderful neighborhood, and the people are the best. But it's a real challenge to make it there in that neighborhood.
297-5633 for Clark Cadzo, owner of Highland Coffees, who's become not only the one of the longest-standing merchants in the area, but he also is the resident historian for this part of the world. Wayne Parent, the LSU political scientist, says, Jim, you know how much I support the place. It's been a big part of my life and hundreds of others for years. Clark's goal has always been to create a special place, and he's been enormously successful. I hope he can continue. All right. Monique LeBlanc says, I love Highland Coffee. It breaks my heart. I made my best friends here, have meetings here, started my magazine here, write here, study here, basically live here. I don't know what I'll do or where I'll go without the atmosphere. There's nothing like it on campus. Highland won't go down without a fight. Clark has done too much for our community for us to let that happen. And let's keep going. One more, Laura Smith, a very long one that I won't be able to read all of, but she said, I worked at Highland from January of 2009 to May of 2010. Since that time, I've seen Clark support countless efforts to meet community needs that often go unnoticed. While I worked at the shop, Clark allowed me to organize a Highland reading series to feature student creative writing, and it goes from there, saying, Clark, when you know what the best course of action is for the future, please let us know. As you have supported your community so generously over the past 25 years, we will support you now. So what are your options if you're out the gate, literally, on the 24th of December?
Well, we'll do our best to find another place to locate. That's our best option. And so that may not be easy, and we certainly love that neighborhood and do everything we can to stay in that neighborhood. And so that's the approach that we'll take.
297-5633. Hayes on Perkins, you're on the air with Clark Cadzo. Good morning, sir.
My question for Clark was, why not just go on and sign the lease? It seems like the value of the business is heavily tied up in the leasehold, more so than the fixtures and equipment that it's in the leasehold and the goodwill towards the business. And that signing the lease kind of gives you a lot more options, whether to do improvements, try to generate more revenue, sell the business to somebody who has the energy to try to make those changes, or to partner up with somebody, but that without signing the lease, that, you know, there's a lot of lost value.
All right. Why not sign a lease?
Well, first
of
all,
you have that option. Do you have that option?
I'm not sure exactly. That's something we're talking about. But I think that people, again, have to realize that coffee shops, first of all, make money $3.50 at a time. And you have to have an awful lot of customers to pay your bills. And the rent is one of your biggest bills. If you're paying too much rent, you can't stay in business. And again, I think that people have to look down Chime Street and look at the obvious struggle that it is to exist on Chime Street. Again, outsiders always believe that any amount of rent should be able to be paid on Chime Street because you're next to LSU. They don't realize the challenges with your main base being gone for so many months of the year and being cut off from the city and having so little parking. You know, we also don't have the chance for a drive-through on our building. And so you don't want to just put yourself in a situation where there's no way you can pay mm-hmm. your bills.
Clark has seen other businesses come and go, and next door you have a Reginelli's now, and I noticed it was closed in the summer.
Yes, they were. They closed for the summer and kind of reorganized their concept and came back with some new ideas, and they're back open this fall.
And the Godfather's Pizza, which is a place I used to go, it's been closed for 20 years now. It was on top of your old location.
That's right.
It's not easy.
No, there's been a tremendous amount of turnover. And again, it's this problem, this gap that we have in people's belief or what they want to believe about the neighborhood and the way the neighborhood actually is. It's a wonderful, historic neighborhood full of character and great people, but very challenging for a business because of the structural problems that we've talked about.
And parking is, of course, a major impediment.
That's
you don't have a parking lot.
Right.
People have to pay to park quite often to mm-hmm. Come to your establishment. And as you say, people aren't coming there for a high-end experience. They're coming there to buy a cup of coffee and sit around, read the newspaper, and see their friends. And it would seem that it might not be a prescription for success for a new business, particularly a restaurant, which needs people and lots of them to locate.
Well, there's a lot of restaurants over there, you know, 20 restaurants or so in that neighborhood, and they all sort of compete for lunch business and dinner business. And again, when spring break comes, summer break, Christmas break, and all the other breaks, all of a sudden a huge percentage of the customers are gone. And then we rely on people to come from outside, from other neighborhoods, to support the businesses. And you really have to be on a mission to come to our neighborhood because we don't make it that easy.
297-5633 is your number. Clark Cadzo, the owner of Highland Coffees, is with us, and we will talk more about where we go from here at Highland and Chimes, where Clark has been large and in charge for 25 years, and he may soon be out of the North Gate. 297-5633, Inkster Show at WRKF.org. Back after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. Clark Cadzo, owner of Highland Coffees, is with us, and we're talking about the possibility of this institution at the North Gate of LSU going away come Christmas Eve because the owner of the coffee shop, Hank Siraj, has decided to go in another direction. Now, Hank has been quoted as saying that he's an honorable man, and I think he should be taken at his word, and certainly we would welcome his input on this show as well. And as a business person, I can somewhat understand how if he's got somebody else who wants to come in there and pay more for rent, that's an advantage, and also he gets to kill off a competitor. But then there's the human element, and the human element may trump the business bottom line concerns right here. By the way, how many CCs are there on campus right now?
Oh, I'm not sure. They're a handful.
So you are a competitor, let's face it. But that hasn't been played up a whole lot in this, the fact that you've got a huge institution in our state who now owns your building that's in the coffee business. And you're not on their team. Do you serve community coffee at your establishment?
No.
You do not?
We bring in our own green coffee and roast it in the shop and serve our own coffee.
Now, you almost said that with disdain. You brew your own coffee,
right? That's an important part of who we are. I've worked for a long, long time to try to understand coffee and appreciate coffee and bring in the absolute finest green coffee we can. And it's not easy, and it's expensive. But I want to serve the best quality coffee, and so we bring that green coffee in and roast it in the shop. I think the main reason, I think it's to the property owners, it's a business decision that they want to bring in a tenant that can pay the highest amount of money, and I understand that. The problem is, with specialty coffee shops, with local independent coffee shops, are never going to be the highest bidder on a property. We just don't generate that kind of money. The other thing is that I think for our neighborhood, I think that it's important. We have to think strategically with a vision as a group for our neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Our neighborhood is under tremendous competitive pressure, and I think that we have to decide how are we going to succeed and survive as a historic neighborhood, given all of our obstacles. And
in your 25 years, the only businesses that have survived are Louis, mm-hmm. which is moving right. because of parking. Now, Inga's moved over to Chimes, and she's doing okay, but she owns her own building. And like you, I don't think she's setting the world afire. She just loves that area, is committed to it, and wants to keep it going. So,
and, of course, the Chimes has been there since the early 80s.
But that's across the street with a huge parking lot.
That's true.
They had to tear down houses to get the huge parking lot,
that's
too.
Right. And it's not enough parking. They need more, I think. But it's a wonderful business. And, of course, they have the visibility on Highland Road, and they own their own property. I think the only people who own their own property in the neighborhood are the Chimes and Varsity and Louis and Inga's, and everybody else rents, I believe.
Okay. 297-5633. Renee on Nicholson, you're on with Clark. Good morning, Renee. Renee?
Yes, I'm here.
You're on
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was listening, in on the way to work, and I wasn't aware that property was owned by Mr. Siraj. However, when I, first heard the story, I started wondering, I wonder if Mr. Siraj owns that property. And then I heard you guys say...
All right, well, what's your question?
Well, I don't really have a question. I have a comment. I have previous dealings with him, and
all right. Well, let's not get into that. I don't want this to become an attack on the landlord. It's right now a dispute between Clark and Hank, and Clark, whose background is in social work. My guess is that when he told you this, you didn't punch him out or pound the table, you probably just politely said, okay.
Right.
But you had a lump in your throat as you left the premises.
It's been difficult for a few weeks.
Yeah. Okay, here's an email from Sarah Kirkpatrick. I worked at the original location of Highland and loved the job. My colleagues, my customers, Clark as a boss. It's a special place. in the lives of so many people in Baton Rouge. I dearly hope that Highland Coffees will stay open. Now, Sarah O'Connor, she says. Heather McKillop, Highland Coffees is a great place for a really good tea, coffee, snacks, conversation, art, meeting old and new friends, a destination in many people's lives, a shared space away from work, home, and school. I hope the owner and realtor can come to an agreement to keep Highland Coffees open in its current location. All right, and there's some others. Tracy Smith, who's, I think, been leading the charge on Facebook, he's commented that a lot of young couples have met each other, and old couples. And the sparks have erupted over the coffee.
That is certainly true. I mean, that's the essence of a local coffee shop, is it's a place that brings people together to form friendships, and sometimes those friendships evolve into longer lasting relationships.
Hampton Feel, we know him. Thank you so much for having Clark on your show. He's the most active community oriented business person in the Northgate area. Highland Coffees must survive if the North Gate's community is to survive. This is the second oldest surviving commercial district in Baton Rouge. Thank you for all you've done for our community. We're behind you, says Hampton Peel.
Well, Hampton's an old friend, a great customer, and a great person. And he brings up an important point that this is the second oldest historic commercial slash residential district in Baton Rouge. And that's really one of the most important elements here, is that downtown's the only older commercial district in town. And Baton Rouge doesn't have that many historic commercial districts. And I think that we ought to do everything we can to help the few that we have survive and thrive and help make Baton Rouge unique.
Okay, Rhonda Rogers Armore writes, Highland Coffees has been part of my life for 25 years, since Clark first opened at the corner of Highland and Chimes. He's created a treasured, high-quality, locally-owned business. Clark has personally contributed to renewing the neighborhood and has driven many of the improvements. Clearly, Highland Coffees has great value to many for many reasons. I seriously doubt that any business moving into this location will do the same or be as successful for so long. I understand that many are willing to help keep this business in place, even monetarily, since Highland Coffees is about community. What is the possibility of forming some sort of community group that would contribute to meeting the price monthly? Anything like that in the offing?
Oh boy, I don't know. That's sort of beyond me right now at the moment. I just announced to the customers and my staff 2 or 3 days ago that we're not going to be there. So it's hard for me to contemplate something like what she's talking about. Rhonda's a great old customer and friend. That sort of financial arrangement is difficult to think about right now.
And now a listener points out, and correctly, that Hank Siraj has no designs of opening a CC's there. That's what he is stating, and I believe him. He said it's not really conducive to their business model. It's a big place for a coffee shop.
Coffee shop footprints are usually smaller, and they certainly do better with a drive-through and parking, and as well as visibility and a stable customer base. So there's a lot of things that a coffee shop would look for that they may not be able to find on Chime Street.
297-5633. George Lane writes, the focus should be expanded to the value that Highland Coffees brings to the West Chimes Street community. It's doubtful, I think, that another, no matter who goes in there, another tenant would last 25 years.
Well, it's tough over there. I agree.
Jimmy Weatherford, the owner of Louis, says, I'd like to echo Clark's statement about the difficulty for businesses. Clark has served tirelessly for the neighborhood. Thank you, Clark.
Well, Jimmy's a great neighbor, and he's got such a wonderful business. And one of the pleasures of having this business in that neighborhood, in addition to all the deep relationships that I've been able to form with customers, is to get to know and work with my neighbors. And I really love that aspect of being in Tigertown or North Gates. And Jimmy, Tim Hood from the Chimes, Inga, Sean Cangelosi at Smoothie King, Jared Loftus, and so many others have been really enjoyable to work with in the Northgate Merchants Association.
297-5633, Gustavo on Corporate. Good morning. You're on with Clark.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I don't really have a question. I'm just calling to say that I don't think that the community can afford to lose somebody like Clark that has supported the community over the years. I don't know that you can really assign a monetary value on everything that Clark has done for the community, and I just don't think that we can lose him, and that's what I was calling to say. So thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Gustavo. You don't have a lot of options in that area, though. If this had happened a few months ago, you might have ended up at the old Louis, soon to be old Louis. But there's a bar going in there.
Right.
And I don't know, and it's going to be hard to replicate what you have in any other location, even if it did open. But it would seem that at the very least, if you stay in business and are forced to leave, then you're going to have to set up shop somewhere in the LSU area, but not at the North Gate.
Well, that's what I'm trying to figure out. Yeah, can I stay at the North Gates? If not, you know, where would I go? So that's what I've been thinking about the last several days.
I can tell it's worked on you. And there's no doubt.
Looks like I haven't slept very much. Maybe
need some coffee.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult.
By the way, I had several cups of River Road coffee this morning at Louis.
Well, River Road's another local coffee company. It's run by some really good people, and yeah.
Louis used to have community coffee. I don't know what happened, but they switched to River Road. Mm-hmm. And you brew your own coffee at Highland, and when you walk in there, you see how it's done. You've got the beans on the floor, right?
Right. We have the green coffee right there, and mm-hmm. Often people are surprised when we actually scoop green coffee out of there and bring it to the roaster. Mm-hmm. Because they thought that was just an attractive display. And we have to tell mm-hmm. people, no, we actually bring that coffee in and roast it in the shop. And that's part of trying to have the best tasting coffee.
Mm-hmm. The question, another from Amy, she asks, who was the previous landlord?
There was a guy out of Atlanta, Georgia, a developer who bought the property back in the early 90s. And then he lost that property a few years ago, and the property went up for auction.
And Hank Siraj, who runs a real estate business as well, he got a good piece of property. He also owns the old Serrano's location, doesn't he?
That's right. That's right. It is a good piece of property, but I think the main reason is, I don't know about it from an investment point of view. Hank would know a lot better than I would. But I just, I love that neighborhood. And I think that to be right there at the gates of LSU, and to have such a rich history of businesses and the connections that generations of students have made in that neighborhood and all the memories that have been formed, I think to me that's the real value of that neighborhood and that property.
Zach in Mid-City. Zach, you're on with Clark.
I have a quick question. I was wondering, is the CTX bookstore at the end of the street supposedly is out of business? Has it been spoken for?
The bookstore. All right. Thank you, Zach. That's a good question. If that's a potential spot.
I do not know the answer to that. That's something I'd have to look into.
297-5633. What a history that block has. You remember Magoo's?
Magoo's, was a few years before my time. Just not many, but a few years before my time. But I certainly know all about Phil Brady's Magoo's and have some wonderful pictures of the bar and have heard countless stories about Magoo's.
All right, Tracy on Jefferson. Hi, Tracy. You're on with Clark. Good morning, Tracy. Can you hear me, Tracy?
I can hear you. I can hear you, Jim. Hello, Clark.
Hey.
Hey, Jim, thank you so much for having Clark on. That rally last night, I think, was a tremendous success. I think that the Facebook petition has been a wonderful success and has to be heartwarming for Clark to hear the outpouring of support for his wonderful shop.
Thank you, Tracy. It really is very moving for me to see, you know, the outpouring of feeling for Highland Coffees. Yeah, I agree with you.
Mm-hmm. Leah in South Baton Rouge. Thank you, Tracy. Leah, you're on with Clark Cadzo. Hi, Leah.
Oh, it's Leon.
Leon, I am sorry. Leon.
Yeah, hey, Jim. Hey, Clark.
Hey, Leon.
Yeah, enjoyed listening. And anyway, you mentioned a while ago about somebody wanting to maybe put a financial drive on to Holland Coffees. If it's a matter of lease and stuff like that or money, I'd be willing to contribute $1,000 toward that, and I would challenge you and anybody else to step up to the plate on that, too. If it's just a matter of Clark having to cough up a little more lease payments to stay around, because yeah. I'm committed to that place staying open.
Well, yeah, I think many of us would contribute $1,000, but the problem is that if it's $1,000 more a month, then that's $12,000 a year over 25 years. That's $375,000. That pretty much it adds up, and it can make the difference between success and failure for a small business like Highland Coffees.
Well, that's true. I mean, your rents need to be at a certain place, and if the rents are too high, you simply can't make the numbers work out. And as we've said, it's, you know, every location has a certain potential for sales. And as historic and unique and special as Chime Street is, with its challenges, it's hard to get to the sales numbers that businesses would like to, and that they can make in other locations.
All right, and over 25 years, $1,000 a month would be $300,000. A lot of money.
That's right.
A lot of money. And my guess is that over 25 years, you probably have not saved $300,000.
that would be an accurate statement.
Often wondered if you lived upstairs where that window is and the blinds.
People ask me that. No, that's just an office.
That's just an office.
Yeah.
You do have a residence.
Yes, I do.
But Clark has not gotten wealthy off the backs of his customers. And as you say, you come in and you spend $350, and generally you don't leave after 15 minutes. You're there for 30 minutes, 45 minutes, sometimes 3 hours. Some people spend the whole day there. It's not the kind of business where you're going to have somebody come in and drop $100 unless they buy a gift certificate.
That's right. You know, I think that if you have a business on Chime Street, you know, whether you set out this way initially or not, you have to appreciate other gains that you get. I feel wealthy because of the friends that I've made and because of my customers, you know, the professors and the students and my employees. And, you know, the School of Music has been so supportive of Highland Coffees. And seeing people, when you walk around the shop and see people have been there for 15, 20, 25 years, that means so much. And that's, I think, the kind of rewards that you have to look for.
And some real characters. It's a bohemian place. I miss Jerome Bro.
Yes, me too. That's part of a local coffee shop experience. You're going to get quite a collection of people.
I miss Terry Kennedy.
Oh, yeah, dear friend and incredible photographer.
Marilyn's still around.
Marilyn's still there every day.
297-5633. We'll spend a few more minutes with Clark Cadzo, owner of Highland Coffees, and then we'll hear from Al Vernacchio, Changing the Way We Talk to Teens About Sexuality, Values, and Health. His book is entitled For Goodness Sex, back in 90 seconds on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Frank Barnett is producing, and a few more minutes with Clark Cadzo, and then we'll hear from Al Vernacchio. But we do want to get to a few of you before we part company with Clark. And please keep your remarks brief. And Frank, I need to know where we go from here. We go to Jackie in Atlanta. Good morning, Jackie. You're on with Clark. Good morning, Jackie.
Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Fine.
So I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. I used to work for Clark a few years ago. And, you know, this whole thing has really upset me. Every time I go back to Baton Rouge, I show people Highland Coffees. So my question is, you know, Clark, you've spent a lot of effort documenting the history of the North Gate and how this neighborhood has changed, and it's obviously changed a lot. And so if we get to the point where Highland Coffees can stay for another 5 years due to lease terms, you know, this is really a national problem with small businesses, unfortunately, going under, being bought out by competition or bigger competitors. What's a more long-term sustainable path to make sure that we preserve these historical gems and these businesses of significance? Do you have any thoughts on that?
All right. Thank you, Jackie. Clark?
Well, I think that in a historic district like the North Gates, I think everybody has to come together, property owners, business owners, customers, others with an interest, a vested interest in the neighborhood, and try to figure out how to sustain a neighborhood like this. And perhaps property owners can look at other factors like longevity, commitment to a neighborhood, and value that into an overall rent package, and instead of only looking at numbers. Because I think if we're not careful and our neighborhood just has constant turnover, especially with out-of-town companies, that can be dangerous.
Aaron on Jefferson. Hi, Aaron. Please be brief. You're on with Clark.
Thank you for having my call. I, long-time patron of the Highland Coffees, lived in the off of State Street for about 10 years back in the 90s. I just had a comment about the developers changing the Superfresh parking lot.
All right. I think that's another one that's a side issue, and we may get to the whole neighborhood with Clark sometime very soon.
Sure.
He may have a little time on his hands. Ben downtown. Ben, good morning. Ben, you're on with Clark. Good morning.
Yeah, Jim, you there?
Yes.
Ben Jones, I just wanted to compliment Clark. He's done a wonderful job creating a cultural crossroads, a cultural lodestone there. And I echo Leon's sentiments. I want to do whatever I can to help him keep the shop open.
Well, thanks, Ben. Ben and his wife, Meg, and family have been wonderful customers of Highland Coffees and friends.
Yeah. Hope to see you there for many more years, Ben. Thank you. And Meg's art's been on display there, too.
That's right.
That's another thing that Clark does, is that local artists often have their work on the walls of Highland Coffees.
We love that part of the business.
All right. Steve in Lafayette. Steve, good morning. You're on with Clark.
I just had a quick comment real quick. Just kind of a suggestion, but maybe instead of per unit charging every person that comes in per coffee, maybe charge for time and have coffee and possibly food for free.
Charge for time.
I've heard of plans like that. I'm not sure. I don't know of a whole lot of examples around the country that have done that. But maybe that model does work somewhere.
Then you have to have a bouncer to throw people out when they exceed their time limit, right?
That's right.
I think it's a novel idea, and I'm into good ideas. Mm-hmm. I was in California a few days ago, and I went to see Lod Cook, and he has a sign on his desk that says if you want to kill a good idea, bring it to a meeting. Well, Clark,
I like that.
Highland Coffees has been a good idea for a long time, and you were really the first. There was Coffee Call, but the first of this kind, and there are a few others that have been successful, mildly successful, but you started a trend. You were ahead of the game.
Yeah, I didn't realize that, but that turned out to be the case.
Okay, well, good luck, and we shall follow this, and maybe we'll get Mr. Siraj on the show. That would be nice.
Thanks, Jim.
Take care. We're joined now by Al Vernacchio. He's a high school educator and an English teacher in Pennsylvania, a human sexuality educator for more than 20 years, and his book is For Goodness, Sex, Changing the Way We Talk to Teens About Sexuality, About Values, and About Health. Good morning, Al Vernacchio.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Well, nice to talk with you, and this is a subject that is sensitive, particularly for young people, but you say it has to be addressed, and there are good ways of doing it. How do parents and others who are involved with young people get the conversation going?
First thing we have to do is get rid of the idea that sexuality is somehow dangerous or dirty or something that causes disasters, and change our beginning point to the fact that sexuality is a force for good. It's much easier to talk from that perspective, because then you're not talking about the worries and the dangers and all the things that kids might do wrong. You're helping them figure out what they can do that's right and healthy and good for them.
Well, what's the most difficult part of talking to young people about sex?
I think for many parents, the most difficult part is they're afraid that their children are going to ask them questions that maybe they don't know the answers to, or they might bring up things that cause the parents discomfort. And I think we have to rise above that if we're adults who care about young people and want to create a better life for them and a better experience for them than we often had.
Well, you have several ideas that you convey in the book, starting with teaching healthy sex. How is that done?
Well, I think healthy sex is value-based. So the first thing we do is make sure we're all clear as a family unit why we do what we do, why we believe what we believe, and that we really do stick to those rules. I think healthy sexuality is also positive and consent-based and mutual and focused on positive outcomes rather than potential negative outcomes.
2975633, the book from Al Vernacchio with a catchy title, For Goodness Sex. Bet you spent a while thinking about that one. But what about this age? And I have some listeners who've asked, with sex so available on phones and computers, the world has changed a lot. How does this change the education of young people about sexual activity?
Technology has been the biggest game changer in the last 10 to 15 years. Young people have access to enormous amounts of information, much more than they had when, for example, I was a kid. And that's good news and bad news. There's a lot of good information out there, but there's a lot of information that's misleading and that isn't really good for them. So as parents and adults, we need to provide context for that information. We also need to talk to kids about privacy, because the notion of privacy is really different for young people today than the way that we understand it. And helping them to recognize that anything in the online world isn't private, and they have to make decisions accordingly based on that. Those are two of the most important things we can do today.
And it's a frank book. You write that you and your sweetheart get home from dinner with friends. You go upstairs to check on your 16-year-old, and you see something that causes one to be red-faced and flustered. What do you do?
Yeah, so if you do walk in on your child who's in a situation that you didn't expect, either by themselves or with someone else, the important thing to think about is, what is the family rule, or what is the rule that's being in play here? If the rule is we're not allowed to have people up in our rooms, then that's what we need to address. If the rule is I, as a parent, may have violated some privacy that my kid deserves, I have to own that. So part of it is not looking at the sexual behavior itself as the root of the problem, but the context for the behavior. So if we've said that it's fine for a kid to bring their sweetheart to their room, you know, with the door closed, then we've set up a situation where that's okay. However, if we haven't, that's the problem. The problem is not the sexual activity that was happening.
The book is For Goodness Sex, Changing the Way We Talk to Teens About Sexuality, Values, and Health, from Al Vernacchio, who is an educator who specializes in sexuality. And you have some chapters on gender myths and sexual orientation. And a question that is posed: what does society say when girls lose their virginity as opposed to boys?
It's our society still very much biased when it comes to gender, and has a general expectation that boys are supposed to be sexually active and girls are not. That's really unfair for both boys and girls. And being able to challenge that assumption and say that sexual activity is not something that should be based upon by gender, but based upon by careful decision-making and values, that's a much better guideline than just because you're a boy, you should be sexually active, and just because you're a girl, you shouldn't be. That has never made much sense, and is not the way people live their lives.
There are girls who get pregnant at 13. When should these conversations take place?
It's never too early to start talking to our kids about sex. There are age-appropriate ways that we can do it, from when they're first learning to talk, all the way up through grammar school, all the way up through high school. We need to be having these conversations as early as we can, so that kids know that their bodies are their own, that their decisions are important, and that we expect them to have healthy and productive and positive lives. And And if we orient them that way, I think we can actually avoid some of the difficulties that we face today.
Al, you write that by the age of, ninth grade, about 6% of girls and 8% of boys have had intercourse at age 14. By age 15, 13% of teens have had intercourse. So it starts early.
It does start early, and it continues to rise. By the time most kids graduate from high school, more than half of them have experienced sexual intercourse. So certainly in the high school, we need to be talking very directly about why couples would engage in intercourse, what they're looking for with that behavior, and also letting them know that there may be actually other and better ways for them to achieve pleasure, connection, intimacy than intercourse. I've had too many teenagers tell me that the reason why they started having intercourse with their sweetheart was that they simply didn't know what else to do. So we need to give kids a wide range of options for behaviors that can get them the results they're looking for, which is often feeling connected to somebody and feeling pleasure without the risks that intercourse, for example, might bring.
How important is it to have a healthy indoctrination into love and relationships as a young person to be successful when a person is of a mature age?
It's very important. The behaviors that we establish as young people and the skills that we practice as young people will only benefit us as we get older. But of course, it's never too late to start. We can always change the way we think, the way we act, and what we believe if we are committed to doing that.
Question from a listener about abstinence programs and abstinence-only education. What do you think?
There is absolutely nothing wrong with a value that says that sex should be reserved for a committed relationship and defining that as marriage. However, abstinence-only until marriage programs have been shown not to work in terms of they don't actually help kids delay the onset of intercourse. Kids have sex at about the same time that every other kid does. What happens is those kids who do have abstinence-only education, who do have sex, are much less likely to use protective and safe behaviors and therefore are at much greater risk for teen pregnancy and sexually transmitted infections. Abstinence itself is fine if that's someone's value or goal, but we need to give young people the skills and the information they need to effectively achieve that goal. And just telling them not to do it is not going to get them there.
Is pornography dangerous for young people?
Pornography is absolutely dangerous for young people because it gives them a skewed idea of what sex is like. And one of the things we need to be talking about with our young people today is the fact that they may very well come upon internet pornography, whether intentionally or unintentionally. And the message that we need to convey is that one should look at pornography like one looks at their favorite action movie in the big theater. You know it's a constructed fantasy. You know it's not real life. You wouldn't try those same things in your own life. And yet, people, because kids don't have a lot of context for pornography, they often think it's portraying sex the way it happens in real life. And that's right. The myth that we have to bust.
When I was an adolescent, there were very few couples on the streets, same-sex couples, holding hands and showing affection. That's no longer the case. Parents and friends tell young people about sexual orientation?
Well, this is a place where I think the younger generation really has taken the lead, and we, the older generation, can learn a lot from them. Sexual orientation is, to my value, is a non-issue. People are oriented the way they're oriented. What we're looking for is to have a healthy, successful relationship, no matter what our orientation is. So I don't judge based on people's orientation, I judge based on the quality of the relationships that they can create. And I think that's a better standard for us to use in sexuality education classrooms.
But it seems that many of those who are against gay people in general were indoctrinated in the day when homosexuality was considered to be out of the mainstream, perhaps even evil. And it's hard to shed those old biases.
It absolutely can be hard to shed those biases, but again, we need to remember that we had similar feelings about different kinds of people throughout our history, and we have changed our views on that. So, you know, we no longer think of people of African heritage as being substantially different than white people. And so we've changed, we've evolved, we've learned more. We can do that with sexual orientation as well.
The book is from Al Vernacchio, For Goodness, Sex: Changing the Way We Talk to Teens About Sexuality, Values, and Health. Thank you, Al.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Until then, for Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Inkster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Inkster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Inkster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.